That was in front of us, and behind us were wardrobes with all kind of, with names like Fifi and Trixabelle on, and feather boas and wigs and tiaras hanging out.
Nice.
So we support all lifestyle choices in Lug Radio.
We do, even Adam's.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Season 2, Episode 23 of Lug Radio.
Yeah!
23.
Who the fuck are you?
I am your mum.
That's not Ack. Thanks very much, mum.
Right, yeah.
No, really, who are you?
I'm your mum.
Oh, no, really?
Is that your name? Is your name your mum?
Yeoman.
Yeoman.
You guys know me. Nobody else does.
You're Adam Sweet.
They've heard you.
Adam Sweet.
Adam Sweet, the man.
They've heard you, and
they've
met you at Lug Radio Live.
Yes, they probably saw me before you heard.
Well, you are
merged up against
season
Adam
one
Punk
as well.
Glowing.
Ah, yeah, I did feature in season one. I made an noise. I think in about episode five. I was
five men in a
cameo
street,
role.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that was good.
So
yeah.
You're Adam Sweet, and you may remember him from other famous film soundtracks. Go on, tell us about your fame, your 5 minutes of fame.
Right, okay. I used to be in a band a couple of years ago, and we were on the
sound Passion Star.
Called Passion Star, yeah. Go and look on...
Yes, it is the most pathetic band name you've ever heard.
Probably get it for about 15 pence on eBay.
It sounds like a dodgy porn film, don't you think?
Well, there is a story there, actually. Which
Seraphidian
is worth.
Shut up.
There is a story there, which might be worth telling. You can always cut it out. We got booked... we got booked to play at a club in Soho in London.
Yeah,
Soho.
Being naive West Midlanders, we knew kind of Soho was reputed to have various CD shops
Hose.
And so on.
Really?
Well, Hose. Yes. And so we went down there, and we got there, and there's our poster on the door with all our faces on and whatever, and there's six big, big, burly doormen standing there.
Yeah.
And we got out the van looking kind of, right, we're here kind of thing. And we walked up to the door... And these four big burly guys took one look at us and went, "Oh, they're here.
Oh my God.
It was a transvestite bar.
Oh, nice.
Our lead singer got chatted up outside the dressing rooms. And inside the dressing rooms, the typical stage dressing room with
the lights around the mirror?
Light bulbs around the mirror. that was in front of us, and behind us were wardrobes with all kind of, with names like Fifi and Trixabelle on, and feather boas and wigs and tiaras hanging out.
Nice.
So we support all lifestyle choices in Lug Radio.
We do, even Adam's.
yeah, I booked the gig.
So anyway, what are we going to talk about on this show?
Well, which is the last
show
of season two.
Eh?
People like to know who we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm John O'Bacon.
Yeah.
The magnificent Aid Bradshaw.
I'm Matthew Avell, and in case you haven't worked out, Ack isn't here. Yeah, that's Adam Sweet.
Ack's in a tent with a bloke all week, so...
Men with big ghosts or something.
Moans.
Yeah, he's gone off in a tent with his mate Andy to basically...
to be together.
To be together.
With some ghosts.
To beat together.
I believe they fall asleep in each other's arms every night.
Spoons.
Spoons.
I bet Axe deliberately lost his sleeping bag, so they have to share. Rubbing his ginger hairy legs.
Moving on.
This show's about Linux and open source software, by the way.
And may contain swearing.
And adult themes.
Yes.
Indeed.
So we're going to talk to Joe Shaw from Beagle.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Beagle.
I think we should talk to the Open Sir Susie guy.
Open
Sewers.
Open Susie. Greg. What's the surname?
Greg Mancusi Ungaro.
Ungaro.
Nice
good,
one.
Yeah. And we're going to talk to Greg. We're also going to talk about podcasting. Whether
not Greg Bollock.
Why you hate it?
Whether it's I don't hate it. Whether it's hyped, which it is.
moderately pointless.
We're going to read a load of letters out as usual.
We'll also do a little roundup of what's happened in season two.
Yes, and we'll attempt to do Filthy Gamble and then choose not put it in the show.
Yeah, because it was crap.
And just in case you haven't forgotten, this is the last episode of the series.
Well pointed out.
The last one.
We'll be back sometime.
Get your orders in now.
Did anybody else notice the announcement about Open
On slash dot? Yes,
we did.
Indeedly. Yes, certainly did.
Your mum?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Well, I've read that, and to be honest, I've been wondering about Susie for a while.
Yeah, tell us your thoughts, Adam.
My thoughts, really.
Inside the mind of Mr. Sweet.
I think Novell's priority is NLD.
Not Open Exchange Enterprise Server.
Novell Linux Desktop and OpenExchange Server different things.
Okay, yeah.
I think I'd say their main priority would be NLD. it's their own, yeah, very, their own Linux, if you know what I mean.
Very enterprise focused. Yeah,
and I think since Novell took over SUSE, SUSE has tended to fall away from prominence a little bit.
Getting less attention, yeah, possibly.
We've certainly said that on the show, haven't we?
Like when you have a new child.
Yeah.
the old ones kind of are not important.
You don't like the old ones anymore.
You bastard.
I think they've suddenly realised that SUSE's falling away a little bit. And I think this might be an attempt to kind of...
To revitalise?
Bring attention back and kind of focus the community back around it. Because I think they've been hemorrhaging users to Fedora and
Question.
Ubuntu for a while, yes.
How can we clarify these points?
Yeah, good question.
Let me tell you.
It's as if it's scripted.
We are going to talk to a young man by the name of Greg Mancusi Ungaro, and I'm quite sure he's been drunk in the jungle before.
Let's talk to him.
Let's go.
Hello, this is Greg.
Hi, Greg. It's Matthew and the guys from Lug Radio. How
Hello.
You doing?
Hey, Matthew. How are you?
Not bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I'm over here at Linux World in San Francisco.
Oh, how's that going?
Nice.
It's awesome.
San Francisco,
a lot of stuff happening on the floor.
Fantastic. So, my boss is over there.
Yeah, Jono's boss is over there at the moment. So, I suppose you're there to announce OpenSUSE. Could you tell us about that, please?
Absolutely. We're very excited about our launch of the OpenSUSE project. We kicked it off yesterday morning. Our site, opensuse.org, is up and running. OpenSUSE has two major goals. First, what we want to do is move the needle on Linux usage everywhere. We want to reach out and... Okay. Distribute Linux to audiences that include non-technical users.
Right.
And
Yeah.
So we're excited about that. We've gotten the impression as we've talked to people in the community and our SUSE customers that one of the barriers to adoption for Linux, ironically, is getting it. And we want to try to solve that by making our
Surely getting it should be one of the easiest things. Just go and download it.
Well, if you're not a technical user, it's actually a bigger process than you think.
Okay.
We think that to move the needle on Linux usage, we have to reach out to the non-technical user as well as the technical user.
Okay, yeah. So are there other distros that would agree with you?
Pardon me?
I said there are other distros that would certainly agree with that.
I think so. And so we're going to try to lead the charge and move the needle on Linux usage everywhere. We hope to make SUSE Linux available to anybody who wants it, wherever they are, whatever geography they're in.
Okay, cool. sorry, excuse me. So one of the things that's interesting to me is that you're planning to make a usable Linux distro. And one of the ways you want to do that is to get more than just coders involved. That seems to have been a bit of a traditional problem for open source projects. Getting sort of designers, documenters, all those sorts of people involved. How do you think SUSE will be different in that?
Well, I think the goal of building usable Linux takes contributions from talented engineers, talented writers, and talented designers, all three. But what makes you Linux usable is that you've thought all the way through to the end user experience. Many open source projects are highly technical and led by incredibly talented technical circles.
Yeah, that's
and,
very cool.
They end up creating stuff that serves their local community of contributors very, very well, but it doesn't get outside the circle.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that the OpenSUSE project is always looking outside the circle and always looking toward that isolated, non-technical experience.
Right. And Greg, obviously... It seems that OpenSUSE has been largely inspired from projects such as Fedora, and obviously Ubuntu is a very open process.
See, I'd say more like Linspire.
Linspire?
Yeah.
Really?
That's aimed at a usable market, isn't it?
No, I mean in terms of opening up the process. I mean, OpenSUSE is obviously it's an open development framework for SUSE. In terms of OpenSUSE, how much pressure did you guys feel to make it OpenSUSE, or was there pressure to stick with the original way of doing things?
I don't think there was pressure either way. I think there was pretty much unanimity that there was a great opportunity to service the community and service the user base, the Linux users, by opening up development and building out participation models for the creation of SUSE Linux.
Yeah.
I don't think we felt particular pressure to do this now or to do this at any other time. Certainly, there's been a steady drumbeat from SUSE users since the first distribution of SUSE was delivered in 1997, to bring SUSE into an open development framework. And we're excited to finally be in a position where we can make that happen.
But do you think it was something that the market has been demanding? I mean, obviously, SUSE, although I don't think anyone can really fault SUSE with the engineering quality, there's been some reasonably negative press over the years regarding some of the closed source components that have been a part of SUSE. I mean, do you feel that now SUSE are part of Novell and Novell are really going for the completely open approach? Do you think that that's pushed it forward?
I think all the distributions have closed source components, which perhaps if they're not directly packaged with the distribution are certainly easily available and in fact downloadable mostly from links on distribution sites.
Yeah,
such as Codex.
That's right. But yeah. I think if SUSE's gotten dinged in the past, it's because they've been such leaders. To create a Linux distribution that's really usable for an individual, you have to bring certain standard plugins to that individual's desktop.
Yep.
Some of those plugins are proprietary. But just as is the case with many other distros, we'll have those plugins available on site for people who want to add them to the open source version of SUSE Linux.
Right.
But for end users, we will create a distribution that has those packages integrated so that it's the simplest possible end user experience. We want to try to give the community its choice. And for end users, that choice will probably be a distribution with packages Flash, packages like RealPlayer, packages like Acrobat
and
Java.
Yeah.
For the open source engineers, they may choose not to have those packages. We'll make it possible for them to get a distro that is pure open source.
Oh, cool. Greg, I could just ask you a question. No doubt this was thought about long and hard behind the scenes at SUSE and Novell. I wonder if you could tell me, although it's almost certainly a good thing for the open source community and most probably for SUSE users as well, I wonder if you could tell me if there were any perceived downsides to this move.
Are there any negatives to doing this?
Well, I'd like you to explain what the discussion was like behind the scenes as to and how you came to this decision.
Oh, I think the discussion was only about when we could possibly do it. I don't think that there was a lot of discussion about not doing it. Since the acquisition of SUSE by Novell, there's been a strong current of making this kind of openness part of our general development process. There's been pretty clear unanimity about it. I think one of the opportunities everybody recognizes is the chance to change the dynamics of Linux adoption. And we think OpenSUSE will be hopefully a big driver for that.
Okay, that sounds cool. Earlier on you talked about the difficulty for new users to get hold of Linux. How is OpenSUSE going to sort of change that? Is it going to be a disk that they download, they get posted? Is it going to be pre-installed machines with OpenSUSE already on there? How are you going to make it easier for the newbies, if you like?
Well, over time, we'd like to have all of those channels exercised.
Okay.
Initially, we're concentrating on making installable media available to audiences who need it. We'll do that through magazines, of course. We'll do that through other mass market vehicles. We want to try to have our mirror site program, one that has a lot of internationalization to it.
Right.
We've made the move to go to CD ISOs, which creates better usability for downloaders. We're heavily exercising BitTorrent, which offers better bandwidth and good experiences.
Right.
But downloads largely are the province of the technical user. The non-technical user
is sometimes
overwhelmed by bringing down 4 or 5 CD ISO images, then burning CDs, and then installing the machine.
We want to
try to create media and put media into the market that's explicitly copyable and redistributable.
Right,
and
that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're doing all of those things.
Okay. Interesting. Greg, I mean, you work at Novell, right?
Yes, I came to Novell from Zimian a few years ago.
Ah. Right. So you're a monkey.
I'm a monkey. I was a monkey originally.
Right? Original monkey.
Big red hen. I'm a big red hen.
We won't say that in Northern Ireland. You see the one that wears the hat.
Fantastic. Okay.
Something oddly Darwinian about that.
Well, the question I've got is, as people who came into Novell,
This is kind of moving away slightly from Susie a little bit. But as people who came to Nivelle, and I can imagine that there was a bit of a transition for you new guys coming into Nivelle. You know, Zimian, renowned for being pretty forward-thinking people, pretty much celebrities in the open source world. Was there a bit of a culture shock that you guys were kind of pushing for something like OpenSUSE? And was there a real sort of battle when you joined Nivelle with the kind of culture of what was there beforehand and the new focus that you guys had with Zimian?
You know, it's a great question, and one I love to answer because I was overwhelmed. When I first learned at Zimian that Nivelle was going to be purchasing Zimian, my first reaction as someone who's been involved in technology for 20-odd years was frankly, wow, I actually didn't know Nivelle was still in business.
Everyone thought that.
Took the words out of our mouth.
But Nivelle came to us, and they were pretty candid. They said, we think you guys, they said this to us, they said this to Sousa, we think you guys understand open source, we know you're the leaders in open source and Linux, and we want to be the leaders in open source and Linux, come show us how to do it. So we were not bombarded by triplicate forms and, you know, layered cost centers and big corporation stuff.
Smushing.
Quite the opposite. They put us in a room with blank whiteboards, and they came in and sat in the chairs and said, tell us what we should be doing.
Oh, fantastic.
All right, yeah.
So they've been very, very open to input and guidance. Now, Nivelle's a big company, and we've really spent the last 2 years integrating the SUSE Linux kernel with our enterprise business to build the kind of rich, robust enterprise offerings that Nivelle needs to sustain its enterprise,
that's the open enterprise
bottom line. Now we're able to turn our sights back to the community and pay attention to what it will take to make Linux the operating system of choice for people around the world.
Cool.
And that's why OpenSUSE can happen today.
Okay. Greg, do you mind? I'd like to know, if you're moving over to a more open development model, do you foresee any spin-off distributions using the SUSE as a base in so much as Debian has spawned Ubuntu and Mepis and a million other Linux distributions? Do you see that happening with SUSE, and do you look forward to that kind of thing happening?
Well, one of the interesting things about making the commitment to go to open development is that you don't know what's going to happen. We'll have the tools in place over time. We'll build out the development infrastructure to make code check-in, code check-out possible, and to actually next year in 2006, we hope, with the community's help, to create a public build server that will expose some pretty interesting technologies to allow for the creation of packages and applications that run on various target systems.
Sure.
With those tools in place, it will be possible, if someone wanted to do it, to create a specialized distribution based on SUSE Linux. I think that would be actually pretty cool.
Okay.
That kind of innovation is what this is all about.
Okay. Are there any plans to introduce any new tools into the distribution that perhaps we haven't seen before in SUSE or, in fact, in Nivelle or any other Linux distribution?
New packages, you mean? New applications in the distro?
Yeah.
Certainly all the time we're looking at technologies and evaluating open source projects and packages for inclusion. We've done a lot of work recently with virtualization and have partnered a lot with the guys at Zen to work on that sort of stuff. That's helpful for, you know, frankly, more of the large enterprise. But we've had, we've worked a lot with the V over IP vendors.
Oh, excellent.
Try to bring that kind of computer-to-computer telephony into the SUSE Linux distribution. So we're looking at all of the different facets of what you can do on Linux and trying to make sure that
do you have a voice over IP client ready to go? Or?
We've had Linphone in the box, and we're doing, we're adding Skype. We're trying to get all the standards in there so that the community can help us understand which works best and make it work even better.
Sure.
Right, okay. What's your vision, perhaps yours personally, but also Neville's, or Nivelle? We call Nivelle Neville here just as a joke.
No, you call it that. you, Matthew.
Yeah, I call it that. what is Nivelle's big vision for Linux, say, in 2 or 3 years' time? How do you see it? I think everyone
dreams of it being on, or everyone in the free software community dreams of some form of Linux or free operating system being on the consumer desktop, on business desktops, you know. What do you see? What would make Linux exciting for you in the future?
I get very excited about what Linux can mean for everyday users. There's a lot of people out there who don't use Linux today because they actually don't know they have a choice.
Okay.
And one of the goals of the OpenSUSE project is to help people understand they do have a choice. I'd like to really see the needle move on adoption. I'd really like to see Linux become the dominant operating system in countries and nations where computing isn't an everyday occurrence.
I really think that's going to happen anyway, to be honest.
Pardon me?
Yeah, I definitely think that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking forward to, and I want to do everything I can to help drive that and make that possible.
Just talking about OpenSUSE, what's its relationship to the existing SUSE, and why couldn't this have been done with just SUSE?
Well, it was done with just SUSE. You know, we've always had a fast-changing, every 6 month community distribution, which has been marketed under a variety of names. SUSE Linux at one point, a version of it called SUSE Linux Professional, and a version called SUSE Linux Personal. What we're doing now is we are opening up the development process that creates those consumer-facing, those community-facing distributions. We're reverting the product back to its original name.
Yeah.
We're dropping the word professional from the name and reverting back to the name SUSE Linux.
Sure, yeah.
We're basically opening the doors to broad-scale participation in the creation of those distributions which come out every 6 months. So it'll be a rapid development environment with an emphasis on creativity.
Okay, Brett. Unfortunately, Greg, we're going to have to start wrapping it up now. But just one more question to ask you. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Joe Shaw about Beagle. And I seem to remember reading on someone's blog somewhere that XGL was going to be appearing in, I think, NLD, a future version of NLD. It was either SUSE 10 or NLD 10. I can't remember which one it was. And so a lot of this kind of future technology is being developed inside Novell. Are we going to see OpenSUSE as a kind of a breeding ground for, you know, real cutting-edge kind of stuff?
Well, take Beagle, for example. We shipped Beagle in SUSE Linux 4 months ago.
Oh, really?
It's been out on the market there. F-Spot, the new photo tool built in Mono. Take Mono itself. Those are all tools and packages which we put into the market in the SUSE Linux distribution.
Mm.
And we've been doing that continuously for many, many versions. We're going to continue to try to showcase the most broad set of packages available in that distro and at this OpenSUSE.org site.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks.
We all commend you guys for doing some great work on OpenSUSE.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we hope our evilness rating goes down for all the hard work we're doing.
No, the evilness rating is gone down. Can we hook up with you guys at some point in the future for a 5 minute update to find out what you're doing?
Anytime you want. I love you guys.
Excellent.
So I listen in about once a week. I catch up with what you're doing.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, I love this guy. Right.
Just ignore all the stuff about Ubuntu.
The SUSE Linux.
And I guess I'll start ignoring the Neville stuff.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much. And,
yeah, cheers.
Take care and we'll speak to you soon.
So, Jono. Tell us why you hate podcasts.
I don't hate podcasts.
You do. You're always going on about how you hate the word podcast.
When?
Always. There's a difference between hating the word and hating the actual activity.
Says the podcaster.
Sure. We all know for a fact that he loves casting his pods.
Everywhere.
I refuse to be R-rated. Anyway, as the Americans say.
Right.
Right, come on.
Yeah. The discussion that I'm sure you're referring to was spurred on from a discussion in our office today.
Right.
And somebody basically was asking us about podcasting.
Okay.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, we're a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, we're a show. I don't really think of us as
a podcast. We're
a
show who have been monikered a podcast, because we were doing it before it was called podcasting, let's face it.
Yeah.
Well, lots of Linux radio.
Oh, you
lots
thought
of radio.
About doing it before
lots of
podcasting.
Yeah. Lots of internet radio shows were doing internet radio shows, but now
one of them was.
Yeah. Anyway.
No,
anyway,
lots of them.
The point, the thing I wanted to solicit your views, right?
Yeah.
And then your business afterwards. The thing I was thinking was, this whole podcasting phenomenon, it's all really being hyped up beyond buggery, right? It's this massive thing, and everyone's banging on about podcasting.
That's
everyone's,
quite a lot, because buggery does get hyped quite a lot.
Everyone's banging on about blogs, and everyone's banging on about wikis, right?
Everyone's banging on about buggery.
Everyone's banging on about buggery.
Wouldn't it be brilliant if that was the new
Stop banging on and get to the point.
So, yeah. Is podcasting worth the hype? I mean, to me, it seems like there's basically... there's some decent shows out there. I don't personally listen to any podcasts, really.
I listen to about six.
And the vast majority of stuff that I've listened to out there is bollocks.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
And
you have to sift through the crap to find the good ones.
And to be honest, is there many good ones?
Can I speak?
I think there is.
As someone who...
The podcaster speaker.
That's permission, mate.
As someone who briefly had the word podcaster on their website, I reckon...
Muppet.
Yeah, yeah. Right, anyway, professional consultant. Anyway,
writer and developer, thank you.
And let's not forget musician.
Open source loafer. Yeah,
that's a good one. But yeah, podcasting.
Sorry,
right?
Drinky. Fuck off. Carry on, Matt.
Podcasting. The thing is that I think it's a brilliant delivery mechanism for audio content. That's going to
totally
be more and more important.
Let's talk about delivery and maximising the synergistic...
No, Matt's making a good point. It's a very important
delivery
system.
Particularly when we've got decent media centres in our lounges.
Yeah.
You know, when Myth TV becomes all right to install without a physics degree, then, you know, it'd be great to have maybe even TV delivered in that method if that ever becomes possible, which surely
TiVo.
It will. Well, no, because TiVo doesn't deliver it. It just grabs what's being delivered anyway and makes it available at your convenience. Whereas podcasting's different because it allows you to anyone to set up. You still have to get over with TiVo. You still have to get over the barrier of getting onto a TV channel.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You see, and that's Matt, a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Go on.
Couldn't finish. The main thing though is that I listen to a lot of radio because I drive 3 hours a day for work, right, to get there and back.
Uh-huh.
And I know.
CBeebies do a radio station now.
Shut up.
No, they do a podcast though.
Capital Disney. So anyway, yeah. So I listen to a lot of radio, and I flick through, and then after doing that, I listen to the radio. And what happens is I come down to about two different radio stations. That's Radio 1 and Radio 4. And the reason
are you trying to be young listening to Radio 1?
Yeah, yeah. There's so
trying
much
to be old listening to Radio 4.
He's dressed for Radio 4 listening to Radio 1.
There's a lot of radio out there, but
there
vast
is,
majority
yeah.
of it is crap. Even though they've had to get through quite a big hurdle to get on the air. So with podcasting, there's no hurdle to get there. So it's bound to be that there's going to be loads and loads more crap because there's no real barrier. Like I was reading a website today with some guy saying, well, we're another couple cast and we just don't know what to call our show.
I know,
there's this big thing called couple casting.
Oh
now,
my
right?
God.
And we don't know what to call our show and we don't really know what to talk about. So we got this one mic that costs $1.99 from Radio Shack and we just kind of, you know, pass it from one to the other. And,
sounds like Slug Radio.
Ooh.
Sorry, guys.
All right, Neuro. And but anyway, my point is that because there's no barriers to entry, anyone can do it. So there's bound to be 99 clump. There's bound to be 99% crap, right? But there's a 1% where you find interesting things, such as the stuff that's being podcast from the BBC.
The thing is,
you use an RSS reader to read your sites, right?
Yes.
So that's just a way of going out and grabbing the content from websites.
Yes.
Okay, so why is podcasting
different?
No,
don't get me wrong. What I'm talking about isn't the technology. The idea of it automatically downloading songs and all the rest of it via an RSS feed.
Yeah.
I've got no objection to that. That's
right,
fine.
Right, right.
What I'm talking about is the content.
Yeah, but you could say the same about websites. 99% of websites are shite. Or 99% of blogs are shite.
And we've said that on the show.
You've certainly said that,
I've
Matt.
Said that, yeah,
the
and
thing
I
is, though, yeah, I mean, what I'm basically saying is that...
You're talking ass is what you're really saying,
no,
isn't it?
What I'm saying
rare,
is...
Rare, rare, rare. Oh, is that your ass? All right.
What I'm talking about...
Rare, 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 rare.
Visual gags. Abandoned on this very much.
Shut up, you bald twat. What I'm talking about is the web is not
the
hyped.
Interweb.
The web is not hyped half as much as podcasting.
Stop calling the fucking interweb.
Do you know why it's not hyped as much? Because that happened... That's so 10 years ago.
Yeah. Let me finish.
Right, man. Right, okay.
What I'm talking about is podcasting... Right, I remember when the web kind of hit sort of commercial
hit
use.
Hit the fan, yeah.
Right? And it was hyped, and podcasting is being hyped beyond, like, you'd believe.
But beyond the web, in fact.
But the point I'm making is that the web does have a number of genuine uses, whereas I'm yet to see any real genuine uses of podcasting. Podcasting is, don't get me wrong, podcasting
we're
is useful.
We're a genuine user
hang on,
of podcasting.
Hang on. Podcasting is useful, and podcasting is entertaining in many situations.
Yeah.
But there's so much crap out there, and I personally don't...
But there's a lot of crap websites.
There are a lot of crap websites, but people aren't banging on about the web half as much as people are banging on about
podcasts. But they were 10 years ago.
They weren't. I don't believe they were. I think people were proclaiming that the web was going to do this massive and brilliant thing.
It's almost like an exponential thing, though, isn't it?
Because the web did transform the way... I mean, since the web's come about...
I can't believe the grown men are scared of that moth, by the way.
Yeah, we've got moth wrath flying around the bloody room at the moment. I'm expecting Godzilla to come along and sort it out.
The web has changed the way we do business, and it's just changed the way that we talk to each other and all these kinds of things. And if podcasting was...
Podcasting's changed the way I listen to radio.
Has it?
Yeah, because I very rarely listen to the radio now. I just download MP3s and put them on my media player as I walk to work.
I wonder how much it really impacts people.
As I just said, I don't listen to radio anymore.
It's in the infancy. So you've got commercial broadcasters and non-commercial but well-funded broadcasters like the BBC, establishment broadcasters, who are starting to use it. Now, you've got people like Pod Shows.
Jumping on a bandwagon.
Not Adam Curry's. I don't think they are. I think they're making good use of the technology to get good content across.
Okay.
Apart from people like Virgin Radio, who are just doing the best bits from their breakfast show, who cares? But hang on a second.
Podcasting is basically like, you know, like in the US where they have... open access TV, and you can basically go down to a local studio, and that's the kind of thing. And
without even that access barrier,
and I understand that there's going to be a lot of crap out there because people who think that they're radio people who aren't really very interesting are going to try and do shows. Yep. And I understand that. And I understand also that there's lots of very interesting shows around. I consider our show interesting. I consider some of the BBC stuff is interesting. I'm not saying that any of that is invalid. The point I'm making is regarding the hype.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hype, it's just everyone's going on about podcasting so much that it's as if it's this epiphany
of
technology.
So why do we think
it's utterly changing
the
way we get our audio content now?
Is it, though? I mean,
it's totally changed the way I get my audio content.
The way that you have. Okay, and I use it to an extent. I mean,
how many non-techie people are listening to podcasts?
Quite a few, actually.
I'll tell you, a lot more now, because you've got the Mac,
iTunes.
iPod owners. So iPod owners are quite often people who use...
There's a guy in my office,
only recently that it's come into iTunes, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's made a big difference. I mean, we've even seen a difference through iTunes listeners.
But the point I'm making is that it's the same... I wrote a column for Linux Format about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Questioning the editor... Every media has got to have some kind of editorial process to pick out the shit...
The internet.
And to pick out the good stuff, right?
The internet isn't.
No, hang on. The point
is
I'm
the internet not good media, then?
No, listen, hang
what?
On. Let me finish. The point I'm making...
The internet isn't a medium, it's a distribution method. Four different media. Anyway.
It is.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
The point is that when you buy a magazine, the editor makes the decision about what's good and what's bad, right?
Readers
when you, when you listen to a podcast, you make your own decision about what's good and bad, yeah?
Yes, true. But listen, the thing is, in season one, right, of this particular podcast that we're now speaking on.
Show.
This show. But I was using that word to make a point.
Right, okay.
We would all admit, the two of us who were in that season, would admit...
Me and you, basically, okay.
That it wasn't as good as season two.
It was consequently, bollocks, compared to season two.
Yeah, and consequently, we had a lot fewer listeners.
Sure, yeah.
So the thing is that it moves the responsibility or the power of being editor from some guy who went to Cambridge University and managed to wear a cardigan at Broadcasting House for the BBC... to the listener. Now, there are ways of making it easier for the listener to become editor, such as, I don't know if they're any good, but there's Podcast Alley, there is other things like that where people can rate things. But
this is exactly my point. The editorial process is spinning back round. So, for example, for years people have been able to write anything that they like, and they've been able to put it in some kind... People have been able to stand on a box in a park and talk to the crowd, okay?
Yep.
And... traditionally, the editorial process has been handled by somebody else, somebody who's been put in a so-called position of authority, which is what podcasting is rocking against. Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
Now, when blogs first hit the scene, and blogging was massively hyped up as well, and blogging, I think, is as guilty as podcasting with this regard, and people bang on about blogs all the time.
Yep. Particularly the BBC news site.
Yep. The thing is that. The editorial process has started turning back round, and we've started seeing things like planets appearing. and planets will still will have blogs that are relevant. And there's a degree of editorial control because, as we were talking
in
about,
what, I don't know because in what way is the editorial control there?
I unsubscribed.
In what way is the editorial control?
The person who runs the blog will choose whether that person is going to be bringing something sufficiently to that planet.
That you,
but
right,
he won't censor individual posts.
Yeah, listen,
it's all or nothing, right? No.
I unsubscribed from Planet Gnome because I was sick of reading certain contributors' completely unknown related things. Basically, yeah, that guy that you just mouthed to me there, right? I don't give a shit what he's doing with his life, and you know.
Who was it? I didn't actually see your lips.
I didn't mouth anyone.
But
I'm not saying that again.
But anyway, the point is, I think planet sites are actually a bad example because they're just a way to almost lead someone on by saying you'll get this content, but then just flooding it with all the other stuff like, hey, I took my dog for a walk in the park today, and all that stuff. Even though I want to read about gnome stuff, but.
But you get that with blogs. You get that with blogs, and you get
hey,
that with podcasts.
I took my gnome for a walk today.
The point I'm making is that as apparently, nice. Apparently there's something like Blogger stores something like 14.5 million blogs on the internet.
Really,
there's a massive amount of blogs, and we'll only ever hear about certain blogs, certain major blogs that are relevant to what our interests are. Okay, and as the medium gets flooded, you need a means of picking out the quality. And the point I'm making is that the people who are going to recommend the quality, the people who are going to basically enforce some kind of, not necessarily enforced, but some kind of advised editorial process, are going to be pulling the strings. And that's going to be no different to any other situation. So I don't see how it's this massively freedom encroaching.
What'd you do at the weekend, mate?
But it is though, because
even imagine my interest in this topic.
Yeah.
Amount of podcasts I subscribe to is one. No price for guessing what that is, and I'm still go and download it from the web.
I just find it interesting that Johnny, who by his own admission doesn't listen to any podcasts, says that podcasting is bollocks.
No, don't get me wrong. The reason why I don't listen to any podcasts is because I've not found any that I want to listen to.
And you haven't got time, perhaps, to waste on finding things. But just let me make one final point from me, right? Obviously from me.
I didn't get drunk. Yes, I did. Sorry, that was the answer. Sorry.
Thanks.
The final thing I'd like to say is that, yes, the editorial process, people, there will still be people in ivory towers and everything saying, oh, you should listen to this, and there will still be opinion formers and opinion leaders, right, just as there is with everything.
Yeah,
but the barriers to entry have gone, so we couldn't have got onto broadcast radio doing this show, could we?
No.
But we have but broadcast media and proper edited media have nonetheless, you know, things like NewsForge have given us space to link to us and stuff like that to say, look, listen to this. So it's kind of like...
But how is that relevant?
It's relevant because we've taken control of the editorial for ourselves, but we've worked in conjunction with traditional media where there's an editor who's paid to be the editor to then get publicity. But at the same time, most of our publicity has come from people who've listened to it and gone, I like that, why don't you listen to it as well?
Yeah.
So it has been grassroots, exactly.
And you get that with anything. You get that with anything. I don't see how that's anything that's particularly special to podcasting.
It is, because anyone can do it.
And to be fair, we've probably had a slightly easier ride because we've done something in many ways quite different within the open source podcast kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
Culture, I suppose you could say. So therefore, people can say that the only time you're going to generally get four guys in a room swearing, talking bollocks and interviewing people is if you listen to Lug Radio.
Yeah.
And if you want to listen to more formalised content, then you can go and listen to something else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been easier. What I'm talking about is when there's another 30 Lug Radios out there, or when there's another 3,000 Lug Radios out there, and there's another 3,000...
Well, then it'll be pointless.
...and tech shows.
That, unless they do something different, it's pointless.
I think there might be some kind of meritocratic...
Darwinian, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Process involved in so much as if it's not worth listening to, eventually nobody's going to listen to it and die out.
Absolutely.
And it is worth listening to. Gradually, people tend to pick up on it and people come to know about it that way.
So therefore, the podcasting is great in terms of the freedom it gives you. I agree with it. The freedom it gives you for anybody to make a podcast is fantastic. But yeah, it's all going to basically result to the same choice between
media. Mainstream media don't give a shit about free software.
I think
really.
The delivery method
I don't know.
Not in the way that we do. They wouldn't interview Joe Shaw, as we may have done or are about to, depending on where this goes in the show.
The guy, what's his name? Firefox. Firefox dude was on the front cover of Wired. And that's mass
media. That's Wired, though.
But do you know how big a magazine Wired is?
No, I know, but it's still very specialist, isn't it?
Not really. It's one of the biggest computing magazines in the world.
It's a computing magazine. But anyway...
Beagle!
Bloodhound.
Those dogs that smoke fags.
They don't smoke fags.
That's their
dogs,
job.
Dogs don't smoke fags.
I've seen pictures. It's their job to smoke fags.
Look, you bald tosser. I don't know how I'm going to break this to you, but dogs don't smoke fags.
I've fucking seen pictures.
Dogs.
It's true.
Dogs don't smoke fags.
Beagles
they
do.
They're forced to by bastards in vivisection laboratories.
For God's sake, they do.
They've got a name. Bertie the Smoking Beagle or something.
Bertie the Smoking Beagle.
There's
not one. There's hundreds of them.
In cages going mad.
Hundreds of dogs that smoke fags?
Yeah.
What, different dogs?
There was years ago.
They just lie around in the communal...
Scientific tests.
They just lie around in the communal kennels going, that's a fag.
It's their actual full-time job to smoke fags.
How do they roll them up?
No, they don't roll them up. They're actual ones with filters.
They buy blunts.
Loads of dogs passing a spliff around the room. Anyway, Beagle.
You're talking about desktop searches, aren't you?
We're talking about desktop search. Beagle's a thing that a lot of people have been talking about in this kind of
desktop search is a thing a lot of people are talking about.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Being talked about with...
Yeah, what is it? Hype or is it any substance
No, I
to
think
it?
it's going to be really good.
I'd like to know is whether you can actually live without it once you've had it, because I think it's one of those things everybody thinks is a great idea. But until you get it, and when you've had it for a while, you can't live without it. Until you've got it, maybe you can't see how important it is.
I think
I think
one of us should now say, perhaps we should ask someone.
We
about
should
that.
Maybe ask someone.
Yeah.
So let's talk to the ever entertaining Joe Shaw.
Indeed, Lug Radio fan.
He's one of the brethren of the famous Fab Four, which is Miguel.
Brethren,
Miguel and Nat and Robert Love and. You know, the fan club kind of gnome people. So, he's a cool dude. Let's
get him on the line.
To him.
Hi, Joe, you're on Lug Radio.
Hey.
All right.
How you doing?
Hey, Joe. Good, how are you?
Not so bad. So, tell us what you're hacking on at the moment.
Well, right now I'm hacking on Beagle, which is our search and indexing sort of infrastructure programming type thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
And we've seen people have been reading about Beagle for ages, and the kind of desktop that we're running is typically not the same kind of desktop that Nat Friedman's running. We acknowledge that, you know. So what kind of things are we going to expect from Beagle?
Well, basically, it's going to index all of the data on your system. You got emails, you have files, you have like instant messenger conversations, address book entries, calendar entries, even web pages that you viewed.
Hmm. Yeah.
All that stuff will be indexed, and then you know, you can search using either our sort of generalized search tool, or we're going to be, you know, actually integrating this into various desktop applications.
Cool, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, you guys developed Beagle in Mono, if I'm correct.
C#?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, there is a ginger member of the team who isn't here this week who would be quite upset by that, but... Can you just sort of explain to us why you chose Mono? I mean, I'm quite supportive of that, by the way, but why did you choose Mono?
It's becoming a very mature platform that really is very pleasant to develop in. I mean, yeah. I've done a lot of C programming. I've written I was one of the guys who wrote Red Carpet, which is a fairly large Python program.
Yeah.
And so, when we switch over to Mono, you have all the nice things static typing and, compile time errors when you mistype stuff. And that's pretty nice, but you don't have to go through all the hassle of, trying to program in C.
So it's a grown-up programming environment is what you're saying?
Yeah. I definitely would say that.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Okay, so it seems as though desktop search is the big thing,
The
next big thing anyway. OS10's doing it. Apparently, Windows Vista's going to do it. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
and obviously, we've got Beagle in the Linux world. Why do you think all of a sudden it's become something that operating system developers have thought, hey, that sounds like a good idea?
Well, I mean, just speaking from my own personal experience, I have, literally hundreds of thousands of emails and, tons and tons of source trees and, all this other information, and I have a real hard time finding it. And I think, we may be sort of on the bleeding edge for, we have a lot more data than probably the normal person, but, we have hard drives that are 160, 200 gigs of data. You're able to do store a lot more stuff on there. You can store all your music on there, all of your photos. There's just a lot more stuff you can put on your computer, and the directory sort of tree falls apart when you're trying to find a document you wrote 2 years ago and you don't know what you named it.
Yeah. Absolutely,
yeah, good point.
Sounds like Jono's desktop, to be honest.
Yeah.
right. I wondered if I could ask you a question.
obviously, being one of the developers, you've been running Beagle for quite a while now. And obviously you find it massively useful, as I'm sure we will do, but I think there's a general perception that perhaps if it didn't exist, people could happily live without it. Have you been stuck without Beagle at any point? And have you found that as in the same way that people say that when you without your car after driving for a number of years, do you suddenly find yourself struggling with bits of paper and trying to work out what to
quite
do?
Quite possible.
A little bit. Actually, just to sort of touch on the earlier thing there, with, as far as like you know living without it, we found that in some of our UI testing, people actually avoid search because they think it's not actually useful. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a stigma we have to overcome.
Definitely.
Early on when we were developing Beagle, we just do sort of test searches. You know, we wouldn't actually use it for finding our data. So I'd search for GNOME or Zimian or, words just to make sure I got hits.
Yeah.
As it's become more useful, I find myself doing the majority of my email searches that way.
Yeah.
Using Beagle, just because it's so much faster than, most of my emails on IMAP, and so doing a search in Evolution is really slow. Have I had to really use without it? No, not really, except when I've, severely broken the tree. I haven't really had to worry too much about not having it. And cool. I hope that once we get a little more pervasive on the desktop and a lot more people are shipping it, other people will be the same way. They won't be able to live without it.
I reckon.
I mean, the way obviously there's a lot of you guys at Novell who are hacking on lots of various projects such as Mono and Beagle and FSpot and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which developers are working on Beagle? How's the work kind of spread out? Because when I was at Guardec, I mean, one of my other questions was going to be, why weren't you at Guardec? Which you should have been at Guardec because it was awesome. But the other question was, I was sat watching a talk somewhere and John Trowbridge was actually sat in the row in front of me and he was hacking on Beagle. I wasn't kind of like staring over his shoulder like a stalker. He was hacking on Beagle and I was just curious as to how many people were actually working on the project.
Well, in Novell we have two people working on it full time, me and John.
Yeah.
And then we have another guy we have as a summer intern, Frederick Hedberg, who was a pretty big contributor in the community before.
Yeah.
We have a couple guys working on it sort of part-time. Varadhan, who's out in India, did like all of our filters, like the open office filter, all that stuff
did.
And lately he's been doing sort of some Evolution integration for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And Robert Love wrote iNotify, so he's definitely contributed a good amount to Beagle as well. And then we have a whole community of people who are hacking on stuff. Someone just wrote a Kmail backend, for example, the other day.
Does anyone use Kmail?
Yeah. Does anyone still use Kmail?
Apparently. I don't, but, yes, there are definitely people out there who still use Kmail.
Let's suppose the weirdos.
I suppose they're afflicted enough already, so you have to help life for them as much as you can. Unless I've missed something, as far as I understand, Red Hat's position is still that they're not going to ship any kind of Mono stuff with their distros. So, how would you think that'll affect not just Beagle but Mono development in general?
So no Beagle for the
because basically no you say that you want Beagle to become more pervasive, but Red Hat, although they're no way the totality of Linux, they are obviously a fairly big player. So how do you think you can get around that?
I'm not so sure, really.
Okay, fair enough.
Options are limited, aren't they? Really?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's too late to throw everything away and switch to Java or Python or something like that. I mean, those are good environments, but they're just not the ones we chose.
Yeah,
that's just that they changed their mind.
So, there's a lot of engineering effort that's gone into that. I don't really know. I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of people. The majority of our users that we see on our IRC channel are actually Ubuntu and Gentoo users.
Ah.
And a lot of SUSE users, too, and Fedora. But I actually think that probably Gentoo and Ubuntu are the two biggest.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You might see people migrating more toward those distros to get the software. You might,
migrating to Gentoo.
Ship the stuff. I don't know. I hope so.
Do you think, it might be difficult for you to say, but why do you think, just as an aside, Red Hat made that decision? What do you think's behind it?
I blame Aki.
I don't know. I would rather not speculate on that. Okay. I mean, it could be
Do you know something that we don't know?
No.
We don't believe you. No, that sounds fair enough. I mean, just obviously Beagle's going. You know, it's a project that's going to. The main functionality is going to be written before too long, and like you say, it's in a pretty mature state as it is. What's next after Beagle?
Like just after the core is done?
Well, yeah. I mean, once you've completed the main functionality into it, I mean, where else can you see the project going? I mean, there's a lot of talk about kind of Project Topaz and that kind of stuff. I mean, can you see Beagle fitting into GNOME 3.0 in interesting ways?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think we can. You know, I don't even think it needs to necessarily be a major shift in the desktop as far as Topaz. You know, the ideas that are being thrown around for Topaz, I think we could do a lot of it in GNOME 2.
Yeah.
You know, we just want to integrate it into as many applications as we can. We're working on Nautilus, we're working on Yelp, you know, we're working on a few different things.
Yeah.
We're going to be sort of improving the sort of best UI, the sort of default search UI.
Sure,
I think the Project Soylent stuff is pretty interesting. Because sort of a people-centric view, you could do some pretty neat things with Beagle. And sort of searches like that. Dashboard is another big thing. It's been sort of, hibernating for about a year and a half now.
Dashboard seems to be one of those things that you always see knocking around on people's screenshots.
Yeah,
But you never actually see. In fact, there always seems to be a Joe Shaw kind of cartoon lookalike in the screenshots they always seem to see. Is it just a means of spreading your cartoon image around?
Well,
it sounds like it could be, to be honest.
Yeah, you've seen me in the tuxedo, right? I look extremely dapper in that tuxedo, and I just want to make sure everyone...
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that, Joe.
Mr. Bean.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yep, thanks.
And, sure.
And keep up the great work with Beagle. It's, I'm sure
Thank
it's going to rock
too.
A ball. Nice one. Take care, Joe.
Take care.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Well, as I'm... sure many of our listeners are familiar with, this is unfortunately the last episode of season two.
Of season two.
We thought it might be interesting to just have a trip down memory lane.
Take a look back.
And just have a chat about some of the interesting things that have happened in season two.
Over the past nearly a year.
Well, even just in Lug Radio in general. I mean, we've gone from a show that was... To be honest, episode
22
one
minutes
was,
long. And
let's face it, it was shite, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was a start.
I think at the time it was great.
Yeah, exactly. It was.
And, looking back now, it sounds rough.
Yeah. it does sound rough as a dog's testicle, to be honest.
It was still better than what was before it, as in nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, there was the Linux Think Tech show around.
And we're a different sort of thing, aren't we?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, anything stand out since we've been doing it?
For me personally, what was it? Lug Radio Live, yeah.
That was phenomenal, wasn't it?
It was amazing. Thanks
for coming,
everyone.
I was always going to be the first one up there. One thing that really stands out for me from this last series, I think my best moment of the series got to be the Jeff War episode. Was that episode 16?
Right.
Because the Jeff War interview was fantastic.
It was.
He's cool as Jeff War.
And follow... Carry on.
No, I said yes.
Yes.
He's saying his stupid yes and his stupid whatever it is.
But the thing that really made the episode for me was the National Lottery.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone seems
punching
to love
the
that.
Keys to the keyboard.
I was talking to Bruno.
Oh, Bruno.
At Lug Radio Live when we went paintballing about the... what the fuck am I on about? The lottery thing.
Yeah.
And he did genuinely cry with laughter. And I came close. I probably listened to that episode about...
Yeah.
10 times within a week, and I still piss myself laughing.
Dear Mr. Langridge!
That's why that's live with Esther Anson was so good.
It was good fun to do that one. The thing I enjoy is just getting the feedback from the listeners.
Oh, man, yeah.
Because, I mean, we don't do anything specifically for shits and giggles, but we do we do stuff that we hope will be interesting to listen to. And it's always nice when you record a segment and you finished it and you think, you know, that's probably going to go down reasonably well. And the National Lottery thing went down really well. So.
A lot of the time, though, we'll finish a segment and think that was crap, and then we'll put it on the show, and people say, oh, I really like that.
There's been a lot of interviews as well where we've recorded... No, we're not going to mention any names, but we've interviewed someone we've thought, fuck me, that wasn't very interesting. You know,
Mainly down to us. When you listen to it back, the
content's interesting. But when you hear it back, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why that's the
case. It's because we miss a lot when we're
hitting each other with drumsticks. Just bashing each other with drumsticks.
Can't believe you told the listeners that.
It's, yeah. Did I tell the listeners that in this segment, or did I tell us in that segment that we just deleted?
In the one that we just deleted, yeah. That, we've just recorded a filthy gamble segment that didn't go very well, so, you know.
So we've ditched it, basically.
There's a nice little bit of a retrospective for you there.
So, what sort of things have, do you think we can take credit for in this series?
Oh.
I think we should take credit for fixing the clipboard.
Fixing the clipboard in Gnome,
yeah, because we single-handedly, didn't we?
No, no, but we just motivated those people that needed.
Windows user extraordinaire fixed the Linux clipboard.
I did. Well, I mean, it's fixed in Gnome 2.12, which is.
But you fixed the fucking paperclip as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Fix the paperclip.
I can see Office a halo developing around your bald head.
See, I mean this is quite a thing for Logger Radio, because don't forget we open sourced Project Looking Glass.
We did.
Exactly.
Well, we gave those two poor guys a load of shit. I mean, in reality, we didn't really open source Project Looking Glass.
No, we
or fix the clipboard.
It's just a massive coincidence.
You say that.
The clipboard thing, maybe, because let's face it, we do talk about Gnome quite a lot on the show, and a lot of Gnome people listen to it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for fixing the clipboard for us.
Whether you did it for us or not, thanks.
I'm not entirely sure whether Jonathan Schwartz at Sun listens to Log Radio, to be honest.
So, yeah, I mean.
You had no choice when you went up to the Sun stand.
Gave him shit about Project Looking Glass.
Exactly.
Got Project Looking Glass GPL'd. I think we should maybe.
And what's happened to it now?
It's brilliant.
Now it's got a highlight. It's going to change the world. So, what else has been a highlight for you guys?
Ack refusing point blank to wear Miguel de Icaza's skin.
That was particularly interesting.
That was fun, because when we did, I don't know if we've explained this to people, but when we did, actually no, I mentioned this at the talk I did the other day. When we did the Miguel interview, the Filthy Gamble, and we mentioned Miguel and his skin, we were a bit unsure about publishing it, weren't we? The only time we've ever considered not publishing something because...
Or seeking someone's permission to publish, yeah.
And part of that was because Miguel's a nice guy and we didn't want to piss him off.
And does a hell of a lot for Linux based on free software.
We didn't want him to feel uncomfortable by what we thought was funny, but sometimes things don't necessarily translate to other people.
Yeah.
So, and at the end of the day, we did mention him in the same sentence as Hitler.
Did
and
we?
And mention killing him and wearing his skin. So we thought that it might possibly be a little offensive to some people.
The interesting thing is that at the end of the show, everybody basically said, yeah, we should really ask his permission. What that really translated as, Jono, you need to ask Miguel's permission. So I thought to myself, well,
you hung out an IRC for a week.
Well, yeah, should I can't, you can't really email somebody asking if it's all right to talk about wearing your skin. And you can't. I didn't really want to ring the guy up. You can't really ask someone that on the phone. All right, how are you doing, Miguel? By the way.
We were chatting the other day.
So I basically loitered around an IRC like some kind of stalker. Every five
Not for
minutes,
the first time.
Shut up.
Silence of the lambs.
Grooming for Miguel.
By scratching while you waited.
My name is Debbie.
You know, I didn't get in touch with him at all. That week, there must have been like International Mono Day or something that lasted all week. And
Mono Day.
And
Monday.
You know,
sorry.
That was appalling. More Matt humour for you there, listeners. Yeah, and, you know, I managed to get in touch with him the minute before I edited the show, the day before it was released.
Right.
And I popped the question to him on IRC.
And then
Miguel,
after he
will you marry me?
Will you marry me, Miguel? Popped the question. And, like, people normally respond within about half a minute, something like that, at the latest. It took about 3 minutes to respond, and I was sat there just sweating. I actually rung him back, and I said to Ack, I'll pop the question, I'm waiting for him to respond. And me and Ack sat there on the phone, waiting for him to respond. And
has he answered yet? Has he?
He said, yeah, it sounds like fun. I said, do you want me to send you a clip so you can see what it's like? And he said, no, I'll wait for the surprise. And I've not heard from him since.
We haven't heard from his lawyers, so...
No.
You know. And you haven't heard from his skin.
Thanks very much, Miguel.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice one.
I mean, apart from just, you know, a bit of a circle jerk here talking about Log Radio, what's happened over the past year in the open source world that's relevant and significant?
Hula.
Hula, yeah.
That started off
hasn't
with,
done
like,
anything yet, though.
It's still ticking away, but it's seen as sort of slipped from the public eye a little bit.
Well, it will have done as, you know, as...
Yeah, we'll wait for the web interface to come out, and then it'll change.
Yeah, I think that's going to make a big difference,
I think the biggest biggest thing for me that's happened this year was Ubuntu, even though it came out in October or whenever it was. Yeah. I think Ubuntu's...
I know we were supposed to be getting someone to replace Ack, but does he have to love Ubuntu as well?
He's in the Ubuntu jingle, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I?
He did the jingle. That
I'm very, very sorry about that.
quick.
Ubuntu.
Yay.
There you go.
Thanks very much.
I'll get my coat.
Fucking, yeah.
It's just over there.
Shut the door after. Yeah, I mean, there's been loads of things happening, haven't there? I mean, everything's grown so much.
You've spoken to some really interesting people. Almost every show.
Any favourite interviews? Jeff War, obviously.
Jeff War.
I like Michael Meeks.
Yeah.
Yes. He was a really interesting guy.
I can't remember who
the Linspire guy. I thought
Kevin Carney.
Kevin Carney was we hit him with some moment. Harsh questions. And
one
that
at a
man.
Time. I think also, I was going to say this earlier, I think interviewing Kevin Carney and also, is it Aaron Sago, the KDE guy?
Sago!
I think you did well to actually give those guys a chance to say something that you probably would have disagreed with before you heard and they actually came out quite well of it.
Congratulations to Aaron as well, because he's been sponsored by Trolltech to work on Plasma, which is the next version of KDE.
Ooh.
And he's been sponsored for, I think, a year. And he's like a real driving force behind that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Plasma looks like. Because I was reading the site the other day, and it looks quite interesting. But yeah, I mean...
But yeah, going back to what things that have happened in the open source community, I'm just trying to think, okay, Ubuntu has made big progress. Mono's taken a bit more... I mean, Novell's really changed over the past year, I'd say. Novell's become...
Over the past year?
I think it's kind of cemented, because a year ago it was kind of, will it be any good, won't it? But I think now we all know that Novell is really on side.
Yeah. I suppose so. I mean...
It's not been a fad, I think is what you mean.
Basically,
they've kept going with it. Yeah,
they mean it.
I think they've correctly characterised the nature of the community they're dealing with quite early on. I think they realised that basically they couldn't just do, say, Sun Java Desktop
and then
continue flogging NetWare because nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
And I think they recognised that quickly to get something out of Linux... They had to give something back, pretty quickly, and I think that they
yeah,
they did well by the Linux community immediately by open sourcing Yast. And even though that I think that was probably last year actually, but I think
and the Evolution Connector.
Yeah, I think they've
that was cool.
I use it every day.
I think they've realised what Linux is about, and I think that's quite good news.
I think that's the key point. They've realised what Linux
is
about.
It.
Yeah, they get it. Absolutely.
Simple, they get it.
There's a lot of businesses that are getting involved in Linux, and they're not really getting it.
But I think credit where credit's due, I think that's down to the Fab Four as well, you know, like Miguel and
absolutely.
Nat.
Absolutely. Oh, wait a minute. No, the Fab Four as in us.
Us?
Yeah, we're Fab Four.
The Fat Four.
Well, yeah, again...
The Crap Four, to be honest.
I think, again, that's down... Hiring those guys is down to the fact that they... correctly characterised what they needed to do.
Yep.
It was a wise purchase, because when we first heard about Zimian being purchased by Novell, I think a lot of people were like, well, Zimian, they do these bits and pieces, but what are they really buying?
You've got some real bloody people
but
there.
But they've got some interesting people who like taking photos.
I remember discussing this around the time it happened at our LUG meetings. I think that was what we said, is they've picked up some really important people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's been an interesting year.
Yep,
and the community's grown tremendously.
Guys, thanks everyone who's involved in LUG, who listens to it, who's spoken about it. You know, Jono was taking the piss at me earlier for replying to people's blog posts where they talk about LUG Radio. But you know, thanks for talking about it. Keep on talking about
just
it.
In touch with the fans. That's all.
Yeah, we're only actually going to be gone for a month, aren't we?
Maybe back in October. Who knows what's happening?
Okay,
I don't know when we're coming back. To be honest,
we haven't decided.
It won't be as long as last time.
We all seem to have different ideas of when this is going to end.
You're on holiday.
Earlier on, you said a month. September, that's what led me to believe a
Did
month.
I?
Yes,
I think that was just a guess. To be honest.
Okay, ignore that comment then. End of the show.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
And
end of the last show.
There will be some emails. We've actually been asked to print them out, so thanks, Jono.
Yep, no problem.
But before that, remember the competition from last week?
Explain it, Aid. Explain what the competition was.
Okay, the competition was to win a year subscription to
Free Software Magazine.
And...
Have you got any samples?
Well, .org or something.
Okay, yeah.
Any samples?
Yeah.
They're at the clinic. Sorry, carry on.
They've got Biohazard strapped next to them.
What, the band?
And to win the competition, you had to come up with a good anagram of the words
Tony Mobley, Free Software Magazine.
Tales from the Hard Side.
Eh?
Is that Biohazard?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Don't listen
that
to
wasn't part of
shopping.
The anagram. The anagram was an anagram of
Tony Mobley, Free Software Magazine.
Okay,
Tony,
so yeah.
Tony Mobley being the editor. By
we've
the
had
way.
Quite a few interests in this. Actually, it's been quite a popular competition. Well, so we've got the winner, and we're going to go with the traditional reverse order type.
Yeah,
thing.
We've got we've
picked the top
it down
four, haven't
to,
we?
Yeah, four good ones. So I'll start off. This one is from Jen of Jen and Ross fame. she says, not particularly amusing. I hadn't realised just how many swear words need a K. Hers is,
research.
Hers is Win Mag of Brainy Zealotry of Esteem.
Not bad.
Slightly random, but
that's pretty good.
Relevant. Nice one. Who's so, who's going to read? We're passing the papers around. Oh, it's me, is it? Is this number three, is it?
No. Number three comes from Adam Sweeney.
Oh, right.
Where's
go
on, Adam.
Three?
Third
place, then?
Speaking of the microphone, Adam.
Well, there is a third place.
This is from Chris Kilgore, and his
oh,
is...
What a brilliant name!
Yeah. Kilgore!
He's with good. Not,
you just gave up all effort halfway through that sentence, didn't you?
In true Look right, Radio okay. style.
Go on, Master Sweet.
This is from Chris Kilgore, and he says, agreeable me, I'm now snotty Oz fairy.
Which is funny because Tony Mobley is Australian.
Right, okay.
Nobody's laughing at this because everybody's too busy reading theirs.
Snotty Oz fairy.
I thought
nice.
That was quite good.
Okay, yeah.
Number two.
You might know this character, Mr. Ben Thorpe.
We like We've Mr. Ben. He's
we
brilliant.
Like Mr. Ben, yep. Yeah. And his entry is Year of Amazing... Is that the entry?
What?
Is that number two?
Yeah, it's not just something that he wrote randomly.
It's
it
got
is
number...
it?
That's the thing, and that is the entry. There
but I thought that was...
Adam speaking to the microphone.
Sorry. There are more words than what you just said.
No, I know that, but I thought we'd... Yeah, okay. So his entry is Year of Amazing Whiny Bottom Feelers.
Which is nice.
Which is brilliant.
Hold on, hang about. Do... Spelling mistakes count.
Why? Yeah. Yeah, you're allowed you're to put the odd letter
well, the winner's got at least one spelling mistake in it, so
we don't enforce
it has to count.
But that,
it
that,
was a close-run thing, actually. That's what my... that was that nearly came first, basically, didn't it?
It did. That yeah. was very close. We don't enforce strict grammar in anagram competitions. Number one. This comes... Thank you very much. This comes from Rich Wareham.
Who is from Cambridge.
He is indeed. And... The winning entry is...
Come on, Jono.
Went off to ogle RMS in a bra. Aye! My eyes.
Yeah.
What a great competition.
Right.
What a great competition entry. That was fantastic.
Rich, excellent. You win a year's subscription to Free Software Magazine.
So, we'll be getting...
Come org, we can't be asked.
We'll be getting in touch with Google ogle it. RMS in a off, and he'll be sending you a he'll be sending you a magazine soon, hopefully.
Yep, so you'll be hearing from Tony Mobley IMAP.
Cool. So, we've got a few emails. Not going to read them all because we've had way too many
we've
of them.
We've had tons. Do you want to start, Mr. B?
I shall start, I think.
Go.
Something that we talked about earlier, we had Matt Grove write in and he says, yo, motherfuckers. Or something like that.
Start
he said, I read this and thought of you. And it's talking about the pre-release tour of GNOME 2.12. New clipboard management based on the free desktop board specification and tightly integrated with GNOME allows objects to persist on the clipboard longer than the lifetime of the application. Halli-fucking-luia! At last! So, yes, thanks for sending that in, Matt, but we had noticed.
Thanks to David Sneak Peek Maidley as well for doing the... The sneak peek.
David Maidley.
Okay, I've had an email
We're going clockwise this week.
I've had an email from Owen Williams, and he says, I've written a podcast/video blog program for Linux called Penguin TV. Mm. You can find it at penguintv.sourceforge.net. Apparently, this project has made releases, which is quite nice. It's written for GNOME using Python, which is grand. And he's basically encouraging us to check it out and make sure that Lug Radio works with it. So everybody go to penguintv.sourceforge.net, stick Lug Radio into there, and send Owen Williams a few emails telling you how you get on.
Yep, please do.
Okay,
okay, Matthew. I'm next. Paul Best has emailed us about Cairo and XGL. Remember we spoke to Cairo Dude last week?
We
Carl.
Did. Carl Worth.
Carl Worth, it was worth it. He says Cairo...
He was Carly.
What it worth?
Carling, Black Label. He says Cairo and XGL don't both do the same thing, nor do they do the same thing that macOS 10 does. Briefly, he says, the back end that's common to Cairo and XGL is called Glitz. And he says, Cairo, XGL, and Glitz don't do the same thing that Quartz Extreme does on macOS 10. Quartz Extreme accelerates some graphics draw operations and mainly accelerates bitmapper operations.
Yeah.
Glitz, on the other hand, accelerates vector graphic operations. So, yes.
I'm not entirely sure that we said that they're the same. I'm not entirely sure that we said that, that Cairo and XGL were in any way connected.
We probably
I'm sure someone's going to send me an email with a small attachment.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, with me saying, they're the fucking same. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for the email.
Yeah.
Right, next.
Yeah.
I got one here from Lex Hyder. He says...
You're making these names up?
No, honestly, that's what I'm assuming it to him. Apologies if you're not. He says, please consider a podcast feed for the lower quality MP3 for those of us with bandwidth issues. I reckon he's going to get one of two answers here.
So your fucking bandwidth there is the answer I give him.
Pull the yogurt pot tighter. I think one of two answers is going to be either no, fuck off, basically, because I think...
it wouldn't be fuck off.
No, it would, for Mac. That's what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think more likely fuck that for two reasons. Is what
I think that's very astute of you.
The alternate answer might be at some point.
Yeah, which will be never.
Don't forget, though, that the HiOG file, which is available via an RSS feed, is actually only normally about 15 to 16 meg, whereas often the low MP3 file is about 11 meg. So you're only saving yourself 4 meg. So you just upgrade.
I think it's mainly for people with like solid state MP3 players, that kind of stuff.
Lame. In other words, they could convert it themselves.
I thought you just said they're fucking lame. So yeah,
get up and walk.
Thanks for the email, anyway.
Yep. Yeah,
please. Duly ignored.
Yeah. Sorry, but thanks.
And don't fuck off.
Yeah, please don't.
Ian W. writes from good old Maryland of the US of A.
Good old, famous for their cookies.
Yeah,
from Maryland.
Nice.
And famous for also Mary.
And he starts off and he says...
Lots of people there called Mary.
Have you finished?
Just about.
What should we call this place, Maryland?
This is an important email. Go on, way. Because it starts off, it says, would like to tell you that your show is freaking amazing.
Yes! All right.
I've only just started to listen to it and already have experienced... Many times, the Lug Radio Syndrome. Do you know the Lug Radio Syndrome?
Can you explain what that is?
Randomly laughing out, isn't it? Where you're sitting on a train or a tube or a bus and you listen to Lug Radio.
Or on a plane like we do.
Yeah, right.
Much.
And you listen to a segment such as Ack punching keys through keyboards and you just burst out laughing and everyone on the train kind of looks around at you.
Yep, that's
so yeah, he said he's experienced that many, many times. Keep doing what we're doing. Don't change a thing. Except maybe for open source street fighting, which, we've already canned that one anyway. Yeah. So, then he goes on to, he snuck a bit of a techie question in here.
Sneaky boss.
Let's not read that out.
I'll summarise. Basically, he's running this terrible noob distro called Mandriva. But in fact, it's the only one that his Wi-Fi card works with. He's considering getting a new Wi-Fi card so he could potentially run maybe Ubuntu, but he's having a trouble figuring out what cards would work better with Linux. Google, basically.
Find out.
There are pages where distros are listed as to which Wi-Fi cards will work.
Also, you'll get help on the Lug Radio forum.
Surely.
Do an LS mod and find out what the module is.
Look, noob.
I know.
No noob knows LS mod.
Surely.
Shut up. Well,
I've been through this many times. So I started out being the guy that bought all the wrong hardware. And if it works under one distribution, it'll work in the rest.
You'd think. No, apparently his card only works in Mandriva.
If it weren't for the fact that each kernel that comes with a distribution is so radically different, because each distribution has their own trees. They're all different to Linus's original tree.
Bonsai.
Yeah, I know, but Slackware.
So there are websites that basically detail this kind of thing.
Yeah,
and as you say, the forums are a very good resource.
Go to mychin.org/forums.
Forums will help you.
Forums are the best place to look in, particularly the Ubuntu forums seem really, really
The Ubuntu forums are fantastic.
So are
the Fedora forums.
I'm sure they are. I don't use them.
From one email that's very gracious towards Lug Radio to... one that's not quite so gracious.
I'm looking forward to hearing this one.
This is from an individual called Jonathan Love. And there's not much love coming from Jonathan, I'm afraid. Dear Lug Radio, I was originally a bit excited about a Linux radio program. I was, however, appalled at the crude subject matter.
He was what? He was appalled, was he?
Appalled.
Oh, dear.
I think he was fucking appalled. Lengthy discussions of having anal sex with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs is highly offensive.
It wasn't that lengthy.
And inappropriate.
This is Lug Radio, you know.
He continues.
Don't you know?
Lift your standards and stop dragging the name of Linux and open source developers through your utter filth.
Oh, mate. Sorry.
We're really sorry, Jonathan, but we can't help it.
We're not sorry for the show. We're sorry that you don't like it.
We are sorry that we've offended you, but basically that's Lug Radio. Yeah. Not that we offend people, but this is just what we are.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for something else, then basically there are other Linux podcasts out
Go
there.
Go to thelinuxlink.net and there's a list of different radio Linuxy things you can have a look at. And
the thing is,
pick one you like.
We've clarified from the start that we don't intend to offend people, but we're not going to hold back in conversation.
We should possibly mention more at the beginning of the program so that it does contain F words.
It contains the word bollocks.
In fairness, you do say at the beginning of every show on the website.
It's started to slip recently, I have to say,
which is
my fault.
To be honest, I think if you go up to a lot of people who have even vaguely been referred to Lug Radio, I can understand people coming to the website who've never heard it before.
Yeah, but
there's a warning on the website, right?
What if they're iTunes, aren't we?
We're not on iTunes anymore.
We've been kicked off explicit.
Because of the last one.
I don't know. We've vanished. There's a mystery.
You can mark yourself as explicit and you'll get put back on.
Everyone on the forums has turned into Columbo and been trying to find out why we've been booted off iTunes.
Some of the
probably
other podcasts
David Love,
I listen to, they've only got to have one swear word and you have to mark yourself as explicit, otherwise you don't get in.
Like Axe going to do that to the RSS feed.
Well, the thing is,
let's mark ourselves as explicit then.
Yeah, absolutely. Why
somebody
not?
Must have submitted you in the first place.
Yeah. But the thing is, we don't intend to be offensive, but... I mean, in all honesty, Filthy Gamble, it's just a bit of fun. I mean, it's just a bit of fun. It's nothing serious. If you go down to any pub and people are having a bit of a laugh, or any staff room, people are going to be having a bit of a laugh about bits and pieces. Admittedly, they might not be talking about anal sex with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs.
No, but you'll hear equally, crude things. And the thing is that, look into yourself and ask yourself why you can't handle it.
Yeah, it's language. It's not offensive.
Language. As perhaps the... outsider here, I'm not a regular here at all. I think it's important that people realise that you guys are not just doing it to put up a front of at all. If you were just sitting,
we
around
are genuinely
in the front room,
filthy.
If you're just sitting around in the front room, it's just you'd probably be talking about the same things, and saying the same things that you are. It's just you're just sitting around talking about whatever.
Podcasts aren't radio shows, which is what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
These are not heavily censored or edited.
This is one of the great things about podcasts, to be fair.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can do what we want.
But the thing is, it's just language. Language? It's just language.
It's all his fault.
Language. No, I mean, it's just language. And the one thing that a lot of people have said to me when I've met people at Lug Radio Live and conferences and stuff is that one of the things I like about Lug Radio is that it's not held back.
Yeah.
Is that it's just... people talking reasonably honestly about stuff and down to earth. So we appreciate your email, Jonathan.
We are genuinely sorry that we've offended you.
We were not going to change, unfortunately.
Yes,
so
it's tough.
Deal with it.
I personally happen to think that's incredibly funny.
It was really quite funny.
I'm sure some of our listeners will be amused and bemused by that. So, Matthew, have you got anything else to read?
I ain't, mate. I'm spent.
You spent. Do you want to read that?
Oh, I'd love to.
Let's fucking zip through these.
Hand it over. Okay, which one am I reading? Just started listening to your show. I'm a Mac guy, but I also use standard FreeBSD and Linux here and there. He says
he's learning Mac then.
He's learning shitload more about Linux, but his language has become fucking atrocious.
Yes!
Thanks, you bastards. And that's Jim.
Oh, I like him.
Should we introduce Jim to Jonathan Love? Yeah. His name was.
And they can make man love. Jim at Magrathea.
Jim Love.
Have some man love, did you say?
So, yeah. Thanks a lot, Jim. I've got to remember this. Jason Alford is quite a famous magician, apparently, in America. And he runs a website called The Second Deal, which is really famous amongst magicians, apparently. And I've been asked to say hello to him because he listens to our show and really enjoys it.
So we're having shout-outs now, are we?
Oh, are we? Hello, Nan. How
I've
are you
just
doing?
I'll do a shout-out to Dan over at Intercell Solutions.
Dan at Intercell Solutions?
Absolutely.
As in the Asterisk guys?
Yeah, he's been helping me out with my fantastic new Asterisk box.
I think they do our Asterisk at work. Wow.
Do they really? No, they don't, do they?
I thought it was Intercell. I might be wrong.
Think it's Intercell that do your ones at work. Yeah, but
this,
yeah.
This is totally
Ron does them as well, doesn't he?
Eh?
Ron does them as well.
Ron does who?
Do Ron Asterisk Ron stuff.
I wouldn't like to say.
Any Mrs. Ron.
Mrs. Ron, yeah.
Any shouts, Adam?
To his 16-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, shut up. She's not 16 anyway.
17.
She's 16 and three quarters.
No, she's not at all.
She can drive now.
No, she can't.
Adam.
She's a girl.
Well, we were on about her. Yeah, hello, Jenny. get the baby oil out, darling. I'll be round in half an hour.
Oh, my God.
Sweet.
I just say...
Sorry, Jonathan.
No, come on. Let's do more for him.
Maybe. What, just be more offensive?
Yeah.
Go on then, Adam.
Can I just get back to... Neil's
reality
point a little bit. Just a couple of points here. I'll whiz through them. When we were talking... Oh, yeah, email from John Muser here. He may be Moiser if he's from Germany, but maybe not. he mentioned we were talking about Samba that, a couple of episodes back. You were talking about
Samba. How did you say you weren't fucking
back.
Involved? Don't you take the credit.
he said, has anyone...
I'm really joking.
Has anyone considered iFolder?
Yes.
So I looked at this the other day, and it looks damn good, actually.
It is, actually. How did we forget about iFolder?
I know. Well, the thing is, we actually talked about it afterwards, I seem to remember, because Ak was mentioning it.
Quickly.
But we didn't
iFolder?
Record the segment. You know how we talk about things off-air and don't record them?
Yeah. Mm. Are you saying that we should live in some kind of Big Brother house? How shocking
episode
would that
23.
Be?
Right, basically, iFolder is something that's been worked on at Novell.
And it's not a Mac thing, even though it sounds like it.
Okay. It can be a Mac thing. It can also be a Windows thing.
Yeah.
But it's primarily, I guess, a Linux thing, which is always good.
What's it let you do?
It's
basically what we were asking for.
It's basically a cross between...
Look how quickly that was written. We suggest it one week, and it was written the next week.
must be that influence that we think we got. Yeah.
Right,
what does it do?
My technical definition may not be very good, because I only looked at it briefly while I was at work. It's basically a synchronized
swimming
file sharing
fish
across your network.
Yeah, okay, brilliant.
Cross platform Mac.
So if
Windows.
I've got a file and I want my mate Jehoshaphat over the office to edit it as well, then
Think basically you create an iFolder. It's just a regular folder. You turn it into an iFolder. You
right
click it. Turn it into an iFolder. You set up a iFolder server and tell it to manage all these different iFolders, and then you basically just synchronize across the network.
Oh, brilliant!
It integrates into the OS as well. Like integrates well into GNOME and Windows. And
excellent,
stuff.
Nice
yeah.
one.
So,
I don't think I know enough about how it works underneath to say whether
let's
it's
make
any
that
better or
our
worse.
Summer project then.
Yes.
It does
I'm
look good.
That.
I forget whose blog it was, but someone mocked up some did some flash. Demonstrations of how it works in some
demonstrations
of the
in Flash or
peak
presentations that were Flash.
But they were very good. I can't remember where they were.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I've got one more. It's not.
I've got another.
I've got one more.
Go right. for it. Thank you.
One more. This is from Campbell Barton, who's he said fan mail from Australia. Comments on your show.
Radio.org.
Is the thing. Hi guys, I'm a 3D artist working from home with Linux Blender and Kit.
He's an artist that's three dimensional.
He's not like a flat artist.
Flat Stanley.
Full tie, and he's done it for a few years. Linux community is small down here, and I'm isolated from any Linux community, so it's great to be able to listen to you guys talk about Linux and open source software.
It's great to have you.
He writes in Python. He writes Python stuff for Blender.
Oh.
And he's quite a heavy user of Blender. And I was thinking, you know, today that we should get someone on the show to talk about Blender. Because it's
well, you're wearing a Blender
haven't you
t-shirt.
Had someone talk
I've
about
actually got
Blender.
A Blender t-shirt on, yeah. We've not had anyone on about Blender yet. So.
Yeah, really?
I'm sure
season.
You did.
So we'll get someone on in the next season. I don't think we have.
I think we've spoken about
you
it.
Talk about, obviously, you talked about
Blender. Jono's talked about it. He's waxed lyrically about it.
I have waxed many a time.
He said
something I found interesting. He said, I had the chance to talk to Jono at the Blender conference in Amsterdam. But he didn't look very friendly, so I gave it a miss.
Well, you don't really, do you?
I'm friendly.
You are friendly.
You are friendly. I don't know why I was looking unfriendly. I had a great time at the Blender conference in Amsterdam. So
were you looking a bit paranoid at
he
the
said
time?
He'd like, he said a request.
That wasn't the conference where you drank till you were blind.
No, no, was that Quadic?
That was
Quadic, yeah.
No, he said some smaller projects that might be interesting to get interviews. So bear these in mind, guys. Rose Garden, GIMP. GIMP would be good.
Rose Garden would be good as well.
Yeah, Richard Bowne from Rose Garden.
Did Garza start GIMP? Miguel?
No, Richard Bowne is one of the hackers on GIMP.
Oh, okay.
No, on Rose Garden, sorry. GIMP was founded by Spencer Kimball and Peter Mattis.
Oh, okay.
Right. Muse, Povray, Yafray, which is mental, and Blender.
Povray. As in point of view...
Ray.
With Rogan.
So there's a new open source Flash program, 2D web animation. I don't know whether he's talking about free GX, the free Flash, or whatever it is, or whether he's talking about something to create Flash.
That's excellent. Well, thanks for the suggestions.
So thanks very much.
Thanks, pal.
Have we got any more? Or should we wrap it?
That's about it. Just another quick one from Snack Lifter, our mate Snack Lifter, Chris Brown.
Snacky.
Yeah.
Shirt lifter.
It says, hi, chaps, which is, you know. He says, basically, given that the FOSS community was so vocal in their opposition of patent legislation, is it appropriate that we take 5 minutes to write to MEPs and thank them for doing the right thing?
They're too busy snorting coke, aren't they?
So basically, if you want to do that, it's a good idea. And he also says, perhaps at next year's LRL, we can get Mark Shuttleworth to fly overhead in his helicopter
and take a photograph while everyone does the world's biggest Ubuntu photo.
That would be awesome.
In other words, standing around with arms on shoulders in the car park. Good season. Enjoy your time.
Listeners, this is the new challenge.
This is our challenge to you.
We're going to have a challenge between seasons, we've decided.
Yeah.
And for this one, we want to see exactly that.
Yeah. An aerial photo.
Now, aerial can be basically from a high-story building or from a
helicopter. In the air, basically.
It's got to be from a bird's eye. Yeah. And topless would be preferable.
Hopefully a little more attractive than Jeff Waugh's April Fool's Day joke.
What with him and
the GTM screen, yeah. It was
the other
day. Rank.
Was it naked?
I wouldn't say it was rank.
I thought it was rank.
That's pretty offensive.
It was funny. It was funny as a joke, but it was rank.
But yeah.
That
so
is rank.
We want the biggest Ubuntu circle.
Yeah.
Jerk. Do it from above.
I'm worried about the circle.
We are going to find some prizes.
We haven't got a prize for it yet, but we will have a prize
and
for it.
The magnitude of the prize will be directly proportionate to how good your photo is.
Yeah. So if
how many people are in it?
If you do a massive photo and send it to us, not only will you be famous because you'll be on our website, but you will get some prizes. And to be honest, the prizes, because we're all basically skint, so I can imagine one of us is going to teeth something
Red
out
Hat.
Of my studio.
Red Hat. Red Hat are due us some freebies.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure he can
hang on a minute. They're
going to
do the world's biggest Ubuntu logo. And we're going to send them a Red Hat goodie. I'm sure Mr. Shuttleworth will send us something. Yes, Mr. Shuttleworth.
I'll tell you what we'll give away.
Well, my
golden
Ubuntu t-shirt you haven't given me yet.
I've got a signed t-shirt from Mark
Shuttleworth. We'll give that away.
You'll have to wash that first after what you've been doing with it.
I want my Ubuntu t-shirt. Anyway,
well, it's a white t-shirt. No one will ever know.
So, anyway, let's wrap it up.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's been a great season.
It's been a great season.
And we'll I've been Adam Sweet.
Sorry. You will be gone.
We'll be back in...
You might be back.
Late September, October.
Something like that. We don't know. We didn't know when it was going to end, let alone when we're going to begin again.
Keep your eye on the forums.
Keep sending them in.
Keep sending them in. Yeah. Yes, show@lugradio.org.
Yep.
Forums.lugradio.org.
Don't forget the voicemail, Matthew.
Oh, nobody bothers with that anymore. 0870-931-1730.
Excellent.
Don't forget also #lugradio on Freenode.
Clan.lugradio.org
if you like fragging.
Clan.
Have we said wiki.lugradio.org?
Yeah, if you like.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah, doing stuff. Yeah,
I like the quotes, the funny quotes.
I know.
That's good. Is that Zalia's doing?
Yeah.
Zalia's
a dude. Thanks to everyone, as usual. So
thanks to the
huge community that listens
in touch and gets involved with us.
And absolutely.
Incidentally, when we start season 3, we'll be starting to talk about Lug Radio Live 2006.
Yeah, so sending your ideas. Yes. It will be in this area. It won't be in Glasgow or Dundee, wiki people. also, we will be doing, I imagine, at some stage, Lug Radio on tour. So if you can put us up or anything like that, then let us know. Yes, Cumbria Lug, we know you're interested. Thank you. Well, so, guys, thanks very much for Lug Radioing.
Fantastic. Send us your aerial photos.
Yes. Send us your aerial photos.
That sounds really
not dodgy. Just random off of, MapQuest.
Send us your anal photos.
What would be great is if someone set a timer on a camera and then just basically lobbed the camera in the air. And it just sort of, you know, fell at the right thing. There's the thing in Make Magazine. Everyone's got a subscription to Make Magazine because we've given everyone a subscription. There's a thing about aerial photography in there.
There is.
Fantastic.
So, Gannon, check it out.
Get over to magazine.com.
Right.
Guys, thanks.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to
Lug Radio.
Gannon's got an old knackered squeeze box.
See, the hash key's bollocks, but I press it, no.
Shut up about marmalade.
Aid was there.
And I was indeed there.
Yeah. And Matt wasn't there.
Oops. Jono's got his organ out.
It'll be great.
Sorry, we're looking at the donuts.
Some people in our listenership, and maybe I might be misjudging.
Is that like a special boat where all that listening?
The listenership.
Is it me or does special brew taste like liquid rust?
Basically, I was doing my marketing exams.
Advertising.
And we'll do a full episode on that in January.
Hey, what are you doing there?
It's loving it. And offended more Americans.
We've offended more Americans in 1 year.
I loved it when that guy said we're despicable. There was this thing called user limits.
which Bruce Perrin started off.
Yeah.
What's happened to that? Because I've followed that.
That's not my milk. That's
not
some kind of
child. Would you like to come back to my place and see my puppy?
Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast. For it is a
excuse me, what's this? Iron Maiden number of the beast. 666. Anyway, this is Logger Radio.
That was very self-controlled.
Well, possibly.
By the way, the show might contain swearing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the show might contain swearing.
And we don't fucking care.
Yeah, fuck off. Any website which supports Netscape 7 must also support Firefox because they are the same program.
Dear Mr. Langridge.
It's Wednesday night. All the stars are out in Wolverhampton at Bacon Towers.
We spoke to Rufus Pollock from the FFII.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Rufus, take it away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Not nearly as fascinating, though, as...
Blood Radio Live.
Fair enough.
It's got an armadillo that gives him head.
Next.
Okay, end of the show. It's on the email section. I didn't wait for the thumb, did I, John? You fucker. Get your thumb out then.
One day we're going to get this right. One dim and distant day. Man's just going to pick his nose before.
He's an itchy nose.
I'm sure, yeah.
Nice.